Exodus in the third chapter, beginning with verse 1. We just heard Brett read a little bit from Exodus, introducing us to the situation Moses was in. You heard about Moses with the children here a moment ago. You realize that Moses grew up to be a great big man. And one day he saw an Egyptian beating one of the Hebrews, and it made him very angry, and he killed the Egyptian. Well, he thought he got away with it, but somebody saw him. And he knew he'd be in big trouble, so he had to run away. He ran to the land of Midian. And that's where we pick up in chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. He was there for quite a while, and then one day God came to him and had something important to say. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses! And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Well, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this holy mountain. In the latest issue of Time magazine, there was an article that was written by Bruce Feeler. This is the issue. I'd recommend you to get it and look into it. He wrote a book called America's Prophet, Moses and the American Story. And he insists that Moses shaped America. You know, I was interested in that and excited about it because I think we tend to read the Bible and about people like Moses, you know. And that just happened a long time ago. And that was kind of interesting, but it was way back when, and it doesn't have a whole lot to do with us today. Well, I got excited about what Feeler was telling us because he was showing us the connection that still comes to us through this great man that God did a great work in and through. And the influence of Moses directly affects and shapes our lives today. I think this is amazing. From the Pilgrims to the Founding Fathers to the American Civil War to the Civil Rights Movement, Americans have turned to Moses in times of crisis because his story offers a roadmap of both peril, problems, and promise. It's an amazing story. The story of Moses begins when? In the 13th century BC, right? When the Israelites are enslaved in Egypt. As Pharaoh is slaughtering all the Israelite babies, the boy babies, Moses is floated down the Nile, picked up by Pharaoh's daughter and raised in his palace. As I said, he beat that Egyptian to death. He had to run for his life. Moses flees to the desert, and there he experiences what we just read in Exodus, the third chapter. God speaks to him out of a bush that just wouldn't stop burning. and says, I'm calling you to make the Israelites free and to let my people go. This is his first test of leadership, isn't it? Is he going to cling to this solitary, carefree, pretty easy life? Or is he going to go to all this trouble that God wants him to do? Will he suit himself or free these people who had been slaves for centuries? His first big question. Now, you know, the problem that Moses faced and the experience that he had really resonated with the first American settlers, didn't it? The people who came to us to this continent from Europe a long time ago. You see, for centuries in Europe, the Catholic Church had banned the direct reading of scriptures. They said that's just for the priests to read. The regular people aren't supposed to read the scriptures for themselves. But the Protestant Reformation said, yes, we should be able to do that. And the invention of the printing press made it possible. And then there started to be these translations of the Bible from Latin and the other languages into English. And then the people could read the Bible for themselves. And they found in their Bibles the story of Moses. And they discovered that, hey, this gives us a sense of how we're being oppressed by the great big Catholic Church. Boy, we feel like an oppressed people, and we got to get out of here. So it was a story that appealed to their utopian dreams in the New World. The pilgrims stressed this aspect of Moses. They said, we're breaking away from our Pharaoh. That's King James, you know? And we're getting out of here in 1620, and they described themselves as the chosen people fleeing their Pharaoh. And while they were on the Atlantic Ocean, traveling over here, they described their journey as like Moses and the Israelites when they went out of Egypt. And when they got to Cape Cod, what did they do? They thanked God for leading them through the fiery Red Sea, and they made it to the Promised Land. By the time of the American Revolution, the theme of a beleaguered people standing up against a big bad dictator had become the American story. It really had. You know, you ever wonder why Americans tend to root for the underdog? That's a very American thing. You know, we have a tendency to do that. Because we felt like underdogs when we were first getting this country started. And they could identify with what Moses was going through. You know, the two best-selling books in 1776, one was written by Thomas Paine. And he called King George the hardened, sullen, tempered Pharaoh. And Samuel Sherwood wrote a popular book called The Church's Flight into the Wilderness and said God would deliver the colonies from the Egyptian bondage. See how they look back to Moses and said, boy, this is our experience too. The image of Moses was so pervasive that once the Declaration of Independence was signed on July 4th, the Congress commissioned Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, and John Adams to propose a seal for the United States of America. This is it, the first seal of the United States. What did they recommend? The Israelites being led through the Red Sea and the water overwhelming Pharaoh's chariots. See, in their eyes, Moses was America's true founding father. But like the Israelites escaping their bondage, that proved to be only half the story, you know? Was it real easy? Was it a piece of cake? No, man, after the Israelites are in the desert, they face this period of lawlessness, which prompts God having to give them the Ten Commandments, right? And once they could rally around to become a new people, it was because they needed the law, freedom, is based on, depends on the law. Now, isn't that the experience of the Americas? We threw off King George and all that sort of thing, and we had this confederation, but it was so loose and sloppy, and it was a big mess. One Connecticut preacher said, he noted how Moses took 40 years to quell the Israelites' grumbling. And he said, now we are acting the same stupid part. In other words, we can't get our act together. So there had to be a new Moses that came upon the scene. And who was that? Who's our founding father? Oh, the Moses who would lead us into the new world and help us to set this up. It's none other than George Washington himself, a reluctant leader, as Moses was a reluctant leader. He leads the colonists to victory, and then he presides over the drafting of the Constitution. Oh my goodness, the parallels are so there that it was just obvious to everybody. And when Washington died, 2/3 of the eulogies that were given on his behalf said, well, he was our Moses. He led us into the promised land and he helped us to get our act together. The leader and father of the American nation was so similar to the first conductor of the Jewish nation. That's what they saw. Now, while Moses was a unifying force as this country was beginning, he was also a very polarizing force as we went along. He got dragged into a tremendous issue that tore this country to pieces. The issue of slavery. The Israelites escaped slavery and that became the dominant spiritual force behind what the slaves were feeling in the United States of America. And what kind of songs did they sing? Turn back Pharaoh's army, and the song, I am bound for the promised land. The slaves especially sang, Go down Moses. They could really relate to this. When Israel was in Egypt land, let my people go. Oppressed so hard they could not stand, let my people go. These spirituals were coded messages. You know what Frederick Douglass said? He said, when he and his friends were singing, O Canaan, sweet Canaan, I am bound for the land of Canaan. Their overseers believed that they were worshiping the white God. Yeah, okay, good and spiritual, that's fine. But Douglass said, hey, this was just really a coded message that I'm getting on the Underground Railroad and I'm heading north for the promised land and freedom. Harriet Tubman, that famous slave freer, she was called the Moses of her people. And yet, as the abolitionists are attacking slavery, they use the Exodus to do so. Southerners were using the Bible, to defend slavery too. The war between the states was seen as a war between the Moseses. I mean, the South said, after all, slave owners could cite a bunch of passages that the Bible endorsed slavery. Look, it's in the Old Testament. Abraham acquired slaves. Moses invited slaves to the first Passover. Jesus didn't say nothing about freeing the slaves. The book that joined America together was now also tearing it apart. What did it take except the most Bible-quoting president that we ever had to reunite the country? Lincoln's opponents called him Pharaoh, said he was an evil dictator, but he made us a vow before God that he would free the slaves. And when he was speaking at Gettysburg, he invoked the Exodus that we just were reading about. And like Moses did, what happened to Lincoln right as this was being achieved? He dies. Did Moses reach the promised land? No, right before they're getting there, he dies. Doesn't make it. The parallels are there again too. Henry Ward Beecher eulogized Lincoln by saying of him, there is no historic figure more noble than that of the Jewish lawgiver, Moses. There is scarcely another event in history more touching than his death until now. Again, a great leader of the people has passed through toil, sorrow, battle, and war, and come near to the promised land of peace into which he might not pass over. Excuse me. Did you know that Lincoln's assassination initiated an even more lasting tribute inspired by Moses in the form of the Statue of Liberty, given by the French to honor the slain president? The sculptor Bartholdi chose the goddess of liberty as his model, but he enhanced it with two icons from Moses. Look what's in her hand, the law. Okay, and around her head is the nimbus of light. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the law in his hands, there was a great light shining around his face. Okay, so Moses is even in the inspiration of the Statue of Liberty. And the message is clear. With freedom, freedom comes with law. Okay? Well, you might think that with the 20th century And it's really a secular age. You know, it seems like religion is just fading and fading. And Moses might have disappeared altogether as a role model. But something very curious happened, something real curious. He was identified as the hero of the American dream and got its way into popular culture and novels and even television. How? Well, consider this. How about the story of Superman? Did you know that that was partly modeled on the life of Moses? This comic book hero was created by two young Jewish men in Cleveland, Ohio, named Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. And they drew from the Moses story, that was the backstory for the superhero of the Old Testament. I mean, how? Well, look, just as Pharaoh's daughter discovered Moses in a little basket, his mother put him in a basket, floated him down the Nile, so Superman's parents put him in a little spaceship as the planet's being destroyed, and they send him off to safety. Just as Moses is raised by Pharaoh's daughter in an alien world before being summoned to liberate Israel, so Superman is raised by Jonathan and Martha Kent in an alien environment, and he goes on to be assisting all of humanity to fight for truth, justice, and... Didn't y'all watch Superman when you were growing up? The American Way! That's right. Truth, justice, and the American Way. You ever know that? How about that? But it was movie producer Cecil B. DeMille who really brings this to America. During the Cold War, the 1956 epic, The Ten Commandments. How many of you have seen that movie, The Ten Commandments? Is there anybody who hasn't seen it? You ought to see it. It's kind of stilted, but it's a great movie. It is fifth in the number of films that have been grossing the most money throughout history. It is a big seller. Did you know that Cecil B. DeMille is at the beginning of that movie? He opens it up by looking into the camera and saying, "The theme of this picture is whether men ought to be ruled by God's law or whether they ought to be ruled by the whims of a dictator." The same battle continues throughout the world today. Did you know that in order to drive home his point, Cecil B. DeMille cast Egyptians with Europeans? European actors were the Egyptians, and guess who played the part of the Israelites? Americans, right? That was intentional on his part. And as the film's final shot comes, Charlton Heston adopts the pose of the Statue of Liberty. And he quotes the line from the book of Leviticus that's inscribed on the Liberty Bell. The last line of the movie. "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land and unto all the inhabitants thereof." Now, even the end of Moses' life appeals to Americans, right? And though he's a champion of freedom, he's also the prophet of disappointment. How does Moses' life end? Does he make it to the promised land? Struggled for 40 years with these people? Does he get to go in? No, he's denied entry into the promised land because he disobeyed God, we're told. Nobody understood this aspect of Moses any better than Martin Luther King Jr. You know, in his first national speech in 1956, he likened the U.S. Supreme Court to Moses for splitting the Red Sea of segregation. And on the night before King died, 12 years later, he predicted that he would not fulfill his dream. He said, you've heard him before, he said, "I have been to the mountaintop, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land, and I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land." How much more Moses can you get? And Moses, like King, reminds us that great leaders will often fall short. What about today? Anything up to date from that? Well, did you know that in March of 2007, 3 weeks after announcing that he was a candidate for President of the United States, Barack Obama was speaking in Selma, Alabama, And he was talking to a group of people who were pioneers in the civil rights movement. And so he said, we are in the presence of a lot of Moseses. And even Obama cast his run for the White House as a fulfillment of Moses' tradition of leading the people out of the bondage into freedom. He called upon that model. And he said, I thank the Moses generation, but we've got to remember that Joshua still had a job to do. As great as Moses was, he didn't cross over the river to see the promised land. In other words, we got a lot of work to do. Now, Mr. Feeler says that the guy who's in the White House now could learn a lot from Moses, ought to be guided by some of the things he had to deal with. And what Feeler says is interesting. He says, you know, first you ought to sell the milk and honey. How is the promised land described? A land flowing with milk and honey. You know, Obama was the first president to hold a Passover Seder service in the White House. But the main point of that service is the story of Moses, which is about a story of hope. Details are fine for negotiating policy, he says, but it's a vision of milk and honey that will move people to cross the sea into the promised land. And then he says, remember the Nile, okay? Don't forget the Nile. Doesn't matter what problem you're dealing with today, all the big problems that face America, you know, the entire moral focus of Moses, and it's repeated time and time and again for us in the Scripture, is taking care of the stranger, taking care of the weak, taking care of the oppressed. Because remember, we were weak, we were oppressed in the land of Egypt. So you really ought to be fair to people, and you ought to do the best you can by everybody. And then a great lesson for any leader of any group, anywhere, especially the President of the United States, is remember the man who's slogging through the Sinai. The guy at the head of the line takes the heat, right? Boy, does Moses take the heat. Keep on reading in your Bible. Was this a Sunday school picnic? Was this a cakewalk? Man, Moses had trouble with the Israelites. They were always looking back and saying, man, this is hard, this is tough, I hate camping out this long. You know, we had it better back in Egypt. I'd like to go back in Egypt. Well, at least we had food more back there, not this stuff that keeps falling from heaven. Boy, they complained and they whined, and many times they wanted to get rid of Moses. They said, who made you a leader over us? Are you really our leader? Are you legitimate? What do they ask about Obama today? Were you really born in Hawaii? You know, right? Whoever's the leader has got to take the heat and put up with the whining and complaining. The strongest leaders face the harshest criticism, but they hold fast against their critics and they keep on going. Maybe you're in a leadership role. Or maybe you've seen or you're interacting with somebody who's in a leadership role, and you can identify with this, or you can take inspiration from Moses, or you can realize what a great leader is going through in whatever organization or group it might be. You just might not make it the goal that you're working for, just like Moses. He gets to the end and he's got to decide, will he fight himself or will he prepare the Israelites for the future? But he tells them right before he leaves them, right before they leave him, I have put before you this day life and prosperity, death and adversity. Choose life. Choose life. Keep going. Keep going. How much more American can you get? You going to quit? No, keep going. Life is rough? Tough. Keep going. Moses is a tremendous inspiration. He shaped our nation, did he not? Can you see it a little more clearly? How can he shape our lives? What can you take from his experience? And he was a great man of faith. John read for us as we began this morning from the book of Hebrews. Boy, you want a good example of faith? Take Moses. His parents, him, and be inspired. Hang in there and keep doing God's work. Is that a good word for us to take from God today? And from this place, and to head out there, wherever God is leading you, I do believe it is. And I thank God for the experience of Moses, and his recording it for us, and him sharing it with us today.